In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Mighty Manfred here with your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review. My guest this time around is singer-songwriter Jesse Wagner, whose talents also include the day job of singing backing vocals, both live and in the studio, for the likes of Lenny Kravitz, Duran Duran, Chic, and many others, including our very own Steven Van Zandt. In fact, Steven has signed her to his Wicked Cool Records label, and the debut single Over and Over is a recent coolest song in the world. Let's hear some of that now, followed by my talk with Jesse on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and today for our Coolest Conversations, I'm speaking with Jesse Wagner, who in addition to having sung with the likes of Lenny Kravitz, Chic, Kid Rock, Duran Duran, and our very own Little Steven, is a singer-songwriter in her own right. Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm excellent and very happy to be chatting with you. You know, I'm hunkered and muckered. I'm safe. Are you safe? Where are you right now?
I'm feeling pretty safe here. My mom keeps cooking every day, and I'm probably putting on a lot of Corona pounds, but you know, I'm feeling good here in Norfolk, Virginia. It's nice and sunny, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, my face mask is kind of a somber black cloth thing. There in Norfolk, do you guys have to wear face masks? And if so, what do you have?
I do wear a face mask when we go out. You see people going out, but me, I'm that bling queen. So mine has, it's studded with rhinestones, and I look like I'm doing Corona concerts in my sexy little face mask. So pretty crazy.
Excellent. Well, I've got a image of you in my mind right now. So you're there with your family in Norfolk and Virginia. Have any of your family or friends gotten ill with the virus, and how are they doing?
Yeah, I had a friend back in New York who got really sick, and I would check in on him every other day, and he said it was like going through, you know, one of the worst experiences of his life, but he pulled through, and you know, God bless, I'm so happy that he made it through. But it was scary hearing him talk about it, because he was, you know, one of those people that's always healthy, always on the up and up, and to hear him kind of pull down like that was really scary.
Now, if the virus hadn't hit, would you have been on the road right now, and with whom?
Since this record is coming out, you know, I've been putting all my attention into that. Stevie finished his tour end of last year, and ever since I've just been focused primarily on getting this done and setting up a tour for my own project. And I would have been having my premiere shows. I am still doing live streaming shows, so people can still tune in, hear the song, hear me be silly like I am, and did a Bruce cover not too long ago, and that was pretty cool. A lot of people tuned in and enjoyed that one. And shortly after the release, I'm going to do another Q&A so people can ask me more questions about what it's like to be on the road, what it was like to tour with people, what it's like to record, you know, or just to know what it's like to be me.
Oh, that's all very cool. In fact, I've looked online, Facebook. I'm more of a Facebook guy, whatever that means. And I've seen these different posts where you're counting down the days to the release and some of the covers. Are you also active like on Twitter or these other platforms, social media places as well?
You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. That's primarily where I hang out.
Well, right now, you're hanging out there in Norfolk and in Virginia, you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I know you seem to love singing all sorts of different pop music, from rock to hip hop. So I would guess there was a lot of music in the air in your home when you were growing up.
Oh, yeah. Now, my mom, she played the piano and she made us sing in church. And there was always something playing on the radio. And it was always a variety of things. My mom was the type of parent that just loved all kinds of music, a little bit of everything. So, you know, I'm a young kid listening to everything from Nancy Wilson, the jazz singer, to the Carpenters, to Marvin Gaye, to whatever was playing. My dad was like big into jazz. So we kind of had like a rotation of all kinds of things. And as I got older, I got a little more into rock music. You know, my friends and things introduced me to Led Zeppelin, the classics, the Who, things like that. So you can hear it kind of referenced in my music, my influences. Mm-hmm. And it, because it's such a wide range of things, the music is kind of like this strange hybrid of genres. But that's kind of who I am. I'm a strange hybrid of genres.
Well, you mentioned singing in church. So how young were you when you started singing in church?
Oh, I guess 7 or 8 or whatever. My mom, she would put on programs for after church kind of things. And mm-hmm. and she would always make us get up. Okay, come on. No, I need you. Get up there. Get up. That's kind of my head. Always encouraging us to get up and do something. And I was actually really, really shy. So if it weren't for her encouraging me to get up and sing something or play something or do something, you know, I'd probably still be in my shell to this day.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister and 2 half-sisters, a stepbrother and a stepsister.
And so were they all active musically too, or is it mainly just you?
Mostly me and my older sister. We would be the ones in church singing, and sometimes we would be singing with my mom. Yeah.
Cool. Well, how does the 70s disco band Chic play into your career?
That's how I got my start, actually. I was working on a record with Omar Hakim. He's an amazing drummer who's played with just about everybody. Mm-hmm. And he was playing with Chic at the time. And he was saying, you know, they're looking for a girl. Would you be interested? And I'm like, yeah, it's Chic. Hello. So before that, I'm completely green. You know, I may have done a few weddings or, you know, bar gigs here and there. So I was completely nervous when I got up there to audition in front of Nile Rodgers. I mean, who's worked with everybody, you know, from David Bowie to Madonna. So, you know, I'm faced with Nile, and he's like, you know, get up and sing I'm Coming Out. So it was a bit harrowing and nerve-wracking, but it was exciting too. And somehow they were like, yeah, that's the girl. That's the one. I fit the look, you know, with the other singer, Silver Logan Sharp, and the keyboardist at the time, Cherie Mitchell. She was, you know, there were these tall Amazon, beautiful, lovely ladies. And I kind of somewhat fit that Amazonian type thing. I'm not a short girl. And so I kind of fit the look and fit the sound. And that's how I got my start. So, you know, thank God for Omar Hakim and Nile Rodgers for taking a chance on me.
Well, were you living in New York at that time or not?
I just moved to New York. Yeah, I just got a job as a drug dealer. I was working for AstraZeneca as a sales rep, oddly enough, and I was terrible at it. And thank God that I got out of the drug game and started singing.
Well, tell me about Jesse Wagner and Envy, because this is kind of a music project you had going on, and I was wondering how, you know, you were trying to balance that and have these other singing gigs. Tell me about Jesse Wagner and Envy. Is that still ongoing?
Well, I want to eventually get back to doing something with my band, but I kind of took this detour to do this solo project. It came out of, I had a rather tragic year, and I had these songs that I had to get out and had to sing, and it became more of a singer-songwriter thing versus what I had been doing with Envy. So that's why I kind of started focusing on this. And then I had these songs sitting around that I added to the project and to kind of fill it out. But when I was with my guys with Envy, I know I'd always loved experimenting with rock and soul and things like that. So it was kind of, again, a hybrid of sound of rock, pop, and soul. And it was great to have, but it was difficult to do while you're supporting other artists, because you never have enough time to put into your own project when you're supporting someone else, and when they say go, you have to go. That's your job, you know. You might think you'll be able to do a show, and next thing you know, they're like, oh, we just booked this, that, and the other, and you're back on the road again. So with this particular project, it's great because I've had a chance to really focus on just doing Jesse Wagner and trying to push me as a brand versus always being a support artist for someone else.
Well, how did you land your gig singing with Stephen and the Disciples of Soul?
I guess I'd have to say it was Jack Daly, the bass player. I did a session with him, and he's a producer in his own right. And someone recommended me to him to do a session for a group that he was producing. And I went and sang my little heart out. And next thing I know, I got a call from Mark Ribbler, as I think Jack told him about me. And Mark was putting together the band, the Disciples of Soul, for the Soulfire tour. Right. And that's kind of how it happened. It was just kind of happenstance, which is my whole career has been that way. It's been weird little connections here and there that make no sense. But, you know, by divine intervention, it's all come together.
Well, this new single, Over and Over, part of your upcoming solo album due out this fall on Stephen's Wicked Cool Records label. So how did you wind up getting this whole project coming out on Stephen's label?
That, again, another kooky happenstance kind of thing. I was going to just do it all myself. You know, I'd come to this point in my career, I was like, just screw it. I'm just going to, you know, go out there and just give it one last heave ho or whatever. And, you know, I wanted some advice. So I sent the songs to Stephen. I was like, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Could you give me some advice on how I should, you know, put together a tour? Because I've never been very successful at that end by myself. And the next thing I know, he was like, yeah, let's sit down and talk. And I was like, okay, sure. And we meet up like the next couple of days, and he says, you know, I don't understand what it is, but I like it. And which is, to me, like the coolest compliment I could ever get from anybody, because that's kind of who I am. You know, again, yeah. I'm like this weird hybrid of so many things. And he's like, have you ever considered possibly being on my label? And of course, in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, yeah, that'd be awesome. Of course, I would consider that. But I'm, you know, trying to play it cool. Oh, really? you have a label? Oh, that yes, I'd love to talk about it. You know, and he's like, yeah, I love what this is. I think you're an interesting artist, and I've never really had anything quite like this on the label or worked with anyone quite like your particular sound. It's different, it's interesting, and I think we could have a good partnership, which was everything I wanted to hear but never expected. You know, you hope for the best, but you know, I was really just going in for advice, and he's like, no, let's do this. Next thing you know, I'm signing up to the label, and I'm like, wow, this is you know, exactly what I've always hoped and dreamed for. So,
well,
thank you, Steve.
So Over and Over, the single, is our coolest song in the world this week. Tell me something about it. When and where did it get recorded?
Oh, it got recorded all over the place. Again, this is one of the songs I have in my little repertoire of tunes that I wanted to put out. I've been sitting on it for a long time. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, Brian Dunn, sent me a little bit of music, and he was like, "What do you think of this music?" And I was like, "Oh, this is cool." And I kind of took it and ran with it and wrote some lyrics and a melody and kind of shaped it up a bit to fit what I was hearing in my head. And I was like, "You know what? I've sat on this long enough. I'm gonna take this and run with it and have some fun with it, because it's just a fun, cheeky kind of tune."
Yeah.
So while I was on tour with Stevie, I was actually hitting up every little recording studio I could get to record all the parts. And Eddie Mannion, he's playing. He arranged the horns for me. He's such a great arranger, and he pulled all that together while we were doing some shows in New Jersey. I recorded at Shorefire Records. I recorded the vocals at my friend's house, and I recorded, it was just a little bit of everywhere. Mark Ribbler came over to Shorefire and he did some slide guitar. So, I mean, I'm really grateful to the Disciples for pitching in and helping me out with this. But anytime I could get home while we were on this last tour, the Summer Sorcery tour, I would get in the studio and try and finish up the record and finish up the songs. And that's kind of how it's been. It's been this long drown out, you know, whenever I can get in the studio kind of thing to finish this record.
What, there's like this percussion sound right at the top of the song. What is that?
That is this weird concoction that my producer came up with, Chris Laybourne. He explained it to me. He kind of took, I think it was a drum, a leftover drum track that my drummer had done, and he kind of flipped it around and added some effects to it and came up with this cool thing, because that was totally his idea. And I came in and he played the tune for me, and I'm like, whoa, what is that, like a train track or what? It's such a strange sound. But that was just his ingenuity of, you know, flipping up some leftover drum tracks and making it unique.
Oh, well, you know, I had the window open when I first was listening to the track the first time, and they're working on this house around the corner from me. You know, they were making noise, and I totally didn't pick up on it, you know. And then when I played it again later, the window was closed. I was like, what? Oh, man, that's all the track. That wasn't from outside.
Yeah, it's kooky, but it's cool. You know, it adds this whole different kind of flavor to the tune. You know, again, ingenuity. That's the fun part of being in the studio. You never know what's going to come out when you're done. You're just like, well, let's try this, let's try that, and let's, you know, play around with these sounds, and then you come up with something really cool. It was the same thing with the B-side, Put Off Saying Goodbye. You know, there's like these bongos. And I'm like, why are we putting I was like, you know what, just do it. Just go in there and play some bongos and see what happens. And I'm like, it's a country song, so who has bongos in a country song? But, you know, you just go in there and you put some effects and you add some, you know, little bits of candy, as I like to call it. And then, voila, you have something. Ear candy, exactly. You have something unique and different, you know, bongos and country songs. So.
So I want to ask you about Brian Dunn. I'd seen that he had the songwriting credit with you, and you mentioned mm-hmm. him being a friend and working with you. And I saw through your Facebook, you know, you were singing tunes and he was on the background playing guitar. So who is Brian, and how long have you guys been working together?
Brian is he's the guy that sent me the music idea for Over and Over, and that's kind of how it all got started. I met Brian years ago. I'm not going to say how many, but you know, years ago when I came back. You know, Virginia is always kind of like my home, because that's where I was born, and my mom is here. So I'm always popping back between New York and Virginia, and I was doing some shows here, and he happened to be at one of the shows that I was doing. And that's where we met. And then we kind of got closer when I needed a guitar player for my grandmother's funeral. There was a song that she loved that I wrote years ago, and I never had anybody play live with me, and we reconnected through that. And ever since that moment, we've kind of been friends and cohorts in music. And so, yeah, he sent me that little musical idea, and again, I ran with it, and it turned into Over and Over. And now that I'm, you know, back here in Virginia, contacted him again, and fortunately he's near, and we've been able to work together to help each other through these times, doing these online streaming shows and just putting out music for people, just to keep people happy and entertained and show our togetherness. So I'm grateful to him to help me continue this part of my musical journey, and both excited to have this little ditty come out and hopefully get a good response.
So he's not involved in any of the rest of your upcoming solo album?
No, just this song. Yeah.
Very cool. You know, you mentioned when you were coming up with the album that there had been some tragedy in your life that was sort of the wellspring for a lot of that material. Can you tell me what that was?
Oh, well, about 4 years ago, my ex-husband had an incident. He had a cardiac arrest, and it was 4th of July, I'll never forget. At 1 o'clock in the morning, he fell out on the floor in the kitchen. And it was this crashing noise. I ran in, and he wasn't breathing. And I called 911, tried to do chest compressions, you know, the whole night, you know, the whole bit. And unfortunately, he didn't get enough oxygen to the brain. So it was touch and go for a long time, and he had to, like, fight his way back to recovery to, you know, for a long time. He couldn't talk, he couldn't walk, he couldn't hardly move. He, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. Right. And he had to fight, you know, for over a year or so to just get back to being somewhat of the man that he was. So through all that, it was a very difficult experience for him and for me, trying to help him, you know, rehabilitate himself and just keep going, keep living, trying to do this music career, trying to have, you know, sustain both of us when my you know, partner was down for the count and couldn't really help out anymore. So it was very difficult, and for a lot of it, I didn't know if I could keep going. I didn't know, you know, there were times I broke down. And so there's songs on the upcoming record that reflect that. But then there's also songs of hope where, you know, I was like, we can't give up. So out of that, I about three or four songs came to me. And I was like, you know what, I have to let the world know or share this with the world, because it was just so much in my heart that I had to say.
And Jesse, we're happy that you were able to take these these challenges and experiences that you said and put them to a positive and creative use. Thinking about your career here now, have you ever seen the movie 20 Feet from Stardom?
Oh, yeah. I think every background singer has seen that.
Right. So who's your favorite singer in it?
Oh, of course, Lisa Fisher.
I mean, have you ever worked with any of the gals, the ladies that are in it?
No, I came close to working with Tabitha Fair, but it never solidified, or she was subbing for me for something else, but I never got a chance to really meet her. But no, I would love to meet Lisa Fisher. Oh my goodness. You know, she's like royalty. I mean, her voice is impeccable. And then she had like a stunning solo career in itself, but you know, that just wasn't the direction she wanted to go in. So, I mean, she was everybody in that film was inspiring, but I'm just, you know, she's just such a great singer and seems like such a beautiful, humble person. So
could you see yourself in that movie? Should they have contacted you?
Oh, of course. I mean, you get into music and you have these expectations when you're young, and you think this is going to happen, and you know, you're fated for this, and the stars are going to align, and sometimes they align just so. And you really feel it when you're on stage with someone else and you connect with people in the audience, and they're looking at you and you're like, wow, I made this connection. You're not quite there. You know, you can feel it, you can taste it, but you're still not quite there. And you know, it's just such an amazing experience being on stage and connecting with people. But I can just imagine what it would feel like if they're singing my lyrics, or if they're, you know, connecting with the music that came from my soul. And yeah, that's the ultimate dream. You know, if I get to that point, you know, God willing, you know, I accept it, you know, but I can't complain because I've gotten so much farther than most people in this who take this journey. You know, it's such a difficult journey to be a musician, to be a performer, and the likelihood that you can make an income, you know, just even support yourself is so slim. So, I mean, I'm grateful to God. And I'm grateful that I've gotten this far in my life and that I've been able to travel the world with all these amazing performers. And I've worked with so many great people. But if, you know, again, God willing, I can cross that finish line, that's the dream realized.
Well, I want us to take a listen to the B-side of Over and Over, the B-side titled Put Off Saying Goodbye. And mm-hmm. we had kind of touched on this. We talked about you and Brian being responsible for that A side. Well, tell me about the B side. Who wrote this?
The music, again, was by Marlon Young, but I wrote the lyrics, the melody. And Marlon Young is a guitar player who's played with Kid Rock, who still plays with Kid Rock now. But he's a brilliant songwriter in his own right. He helped craft a lot of the tunes for Kid's Rock and Roll Jesus record. And he's just a great mentor, someone to listen to, because he's constantly writing and constantly working. And he's also an A&R guy. And then, you know, he helped, you know, find some great acts like Greta Van Fleet. So it was just, and this is another one that kind of came out of me working with people while I was on the road, and, you know, something that I was sitting on for years. And, you know, again, I just kind of took it and ran with it and built upon it and, you know, gave it a little bit more of a flavor than what we started with. But again, you know, I was like, hey, I have this idea, and he strummed some chords underneath, and that's where it came from.
Well, the song story is certainly relatable. How long ago was it? Or is it based on events you witnessed from afar?
Well, you know, the funny thing about I don't know always where these ideas come from. I guess I was in a relationship where I was like, maybe I shouldn't be in this relationship.
Yeah.
You know, this definitely was a while ago. And yes, this is definitely something that people can relate to. You know, you're like, you know, what am I doing here? But then the passion is still strong, even if everything else is falling by the wayside. So... You know, I guess this is, again, something I was sitting on for years. But I think the inspiration, you know, you think you're musing one day. This usually happens to me when I'm daydreaming or musing or, you know, just kind of sitting around. And you're thinking about situations that you've had, and you're like, you know, then a melody pops in your head. And then the next thing, you know, lyrics kind of flow with this melody. And you're recreating this happenstance of the story that's related to your life, and it turns into a song. But yeah, you know, definitely not recent. But yeah, you know, we all find ourselves in situations where we probably know we shouldn't be in, but other faculties or other parts of us are in control versus what should be in control.
Yeah. Jesse, thank you so much for talking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited. This is so cool.
Well, we're going to give a listen now to Put Off Saying Goodbye. The B-side to the new single Over and Over is Jesse Wagner here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
You tell me that sitting nothing more to be said. And then you grab me close, we tumble to the bed. You love me long, I forget everything. Then we start to fuss and fight all over again. Seem to get it right, but I simply can't deny that deep inside something makes me wanna try. 'Cause I love it when you kiss me that way, so I'll just put off saying goodbye for another day.
Putting off saying goodbye. That's Jesse Wagner with a B-side to her single Over and Over out on Wicked Cool Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Jesse for speaking with me on Our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And join me next time when I will speak with Australian singer, songwriter, musician, and producer Dom Mariani. He's the man behind The Stems, DM3, and The Majestic Kelp,
and another of his bands, Datura 4, has just released a new album called West Coast Highway Cosmic. And we'll find out all about it on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.